So hey everyone, and welcome to another episode of Deep Dive with Tiffany and myself, Stephen. Tiff, your son is heading to primary school soon, right?
Yes, next year.
Next year? So are you all stressed out about it? Have you got your game plan down?
I think my game plan is just to make sure he gets to school on time. And then, you know, what happens to him after school. We didn't really fuss quite a lot about which school he was going to.
So getting a spot in the school of your choice wasn't a big deal.
No, we just wanted to go for a school that is near our house.
Okay.
So that, you know, it's easier to pick up and drop off.
Yeah, more convenient logistically. But you are the rare exception because for many Singaporeans, you know, the whole Primary 1 registration is like...
It's a big thing. They start planning, you know, even when they are, I don't know, when the kid is four, three, maybe even years old. Yeah.
Which priority do you get to go, you know, as an alumni? Do you live around the area?
And when should you start parent volunteering?
Every loophole or every possible avenue has been explored. And this can come to the point where it gets really, well, severe, to put it mildly. Because recently, a woman was sentenced to a week in jail for lying about her home address during the Primary 1 registration so that her daughter could get into a specific school.
So the mother had enrolled her daughter via the priority admission thing based on distance, really. And the closer her home is, the better chance she had.
That's right.
Yeah, but the address that she gave was a flat that she had rented out. So she wasn't actually staying in the flat.
Right, right. Mm. So usually, you know, they give an address. They may not be staying there. It could be a relative's or somebody else's.
Yeah.
But in this case, not only were they not staying there, they even rented out the flat.
Yes.
Anyway, she got caught, got found out, and now she's been sentenced to a week in jail. She has appealed that situation, so that's still ongoing. And the mum has said that, you know, basically, she's upset about the whole thing, obviously, but actually she's not the first one to do something like that.
Yeah, because, you know, we found out that also that parents have received jail terms for trying to game the system. So there was a case in 2007 where a father was jailed for two months. Yeah, so there's that. This whole idea of trying to game the system, right? So that they can get to a school that the parents pick, not the child. Obviously, the child doesn't even know
too
anything.
Young to understand the whole thing.
Yeah.
So let's have a chat about this because, you know, this is an ongoing situation. And the question is, will the headlines about this really deter parents, you know, who are considering breaking the rules? And why some parents are feeling this need to sort of game the whole registration system?
So with us to break down this issue today, we have Jun Da Ong. He's a father and founder of sgschooling.com.
Hi, everyone.
And Jacqueline Ho, assistant professor of sociology at SMU.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So Jun Da, you went through the P1 registration system a few years ago for your daughter, right? Do you hear about parents falsifying residential addresses? How often does this occur?
Yeah, I hear a lot about such falsifying of addresses. Not only because I run a SG schooling website where a lot of parents sometimes will email me with their questions. I'm also a part-time property agent, so I also hear stories. And my circle of friends, a lot are parents. So when we come together, we often talk about, hey, how do you prepare yourself for the primary school P1 registration? Yeah. So I hear a lot of stories.
As a property agent, I'm just curious, like, what do people come up to you and ask you? Like, are they just asking for, let's say, like, which address gets me closer to the school? Or are there other, you know, interesting questions they ask you as well?
If you are planning for someone who wants to buy a property, of course, they will come to wanting to know. They need to strategize and buy one that is within 1K of a good school. If you can afford, they will plan to buy the house. You can use that as your address, and that's legit. But a lot goes through it, I would say, the more gray.
Or what's the gray area?
That is, you first rent a one bedroom and then you don't really stay in it. Yeah, so you got that address. You rent it actually for condo, you just need 3 month lease.
Okay.
You got an address, you register. Once you got into the school, then you really go and buy a house nearby within 1K. It can be a resale.
Right.
But you still have to make sure that you still are within the school vicinity.
Yes.
1K.
Yeah. In fact, when you change your address, if it's within 1 kilometer, the schools are fine with it. They check. They're okay.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right. But that's legal way. And you're saying that
I'm saying it's grey because at the point of time when I'm doing a P1 registration, you got a rental address which you don't really stay in.
So as long as you have an address that is in the proximity of that 1 or 2 kilometers, but you're not actually staying at that address, then actually you're breaking the rules or the law.
I would think so.
Yeah.
And Jackie, what other methods have you found out that parents will try and get their children into their school of choice?
Yeah, so again, this is also grey, right? Where parents may not necessarily be breaking the law per se, but it could still be contravening the spirit of the rule, right? So this case of if you rent a one bedroom and you do stay in there, so if you don't stay in there, that is clearly breaking the law.
Yes.
If you do stay in there, that's technically not breaking the law.
Yes.
But I think to rent a place for the duration of the 30 months just to meet that requirement, and then maybe in the end you don't even stay there anymore, you move back into your permanent home, right? I would say that is kind of against the spirit of the homeschool distance rule, which is there, it's meant to kind of protect the opportunities of the students who are actually living permanently in the vicinity of that school, right?
Mm.
And then some of the things that parents might do might be, because there are so many other rules, right? Again, not necessarily breaking the law here, but I wasn't previously a grassroots leader, but because I know that, volunteering for 2 years as a grassroots leader can get me into this phase, then I'm going to do it, right? So it's like meeting the requirement for the sake of getting your child into the school and not necessarily because you have genuinely been a grassroots leader or you have genuinely been an active member of your church or whatever it is. Yeah.
Yeah, but someone argued that, yeah, sure, that goes against the spirit of the law or the spirit of the idea, but it's totally legit because I'm following the rules. I do qualify for this phase. It's just that I did it for a different intention.
Yep.
So is it a question now of whether the system is flawed or is it our mindsets as parents in terms of what we want to do for our children?
I think it's both things in that. I think the system kind of creates a structure that almost encourages or at least allows this kind of gaming behavior, right? You set up these rules and parents are going to find ways to use those rules to their advantage to get what they want, right? And so the P1 registration framework, I think, already puts parents in this position of having to take certain actions to get their kids into school. And it creates this very visible competition among parents, right? So parents see that their parents are doing these things and they start to question, should I be doing this as a parent? And if I don't do it, am I going to not be a good parent, right? So they feel this sense of moral responsibility as a result of the registration framework. The other part of it that you mentioned, Steve, is this like broader culture that parents are operating within. And I think that is definitely something that my research points to as being a very important factor also, right? So what I will say is that the parents of primary schoolers today have grown up in this generation where they have been sorted, they have been ranked, they have been categorized, right? So we all grew up with streaming, with this idea of certain schools are independent schools, autonomous schools. So we have been in this system where we've been ranked and parents carry those rankings with them, right? It creates certain emotions in them. It creates certain anxieties, certain sense of pride, certain sense of, if I had gone to this school, could I have been could I have turned out differently in life, right? And so they carry those emotions, I would say, into the P1 registration process such that primary school choice is like, it becomes their way of managing this broader environment of inequality that they're operating within.
Mm.
Yeah.
I think it's very difficult to come up with that whole P1 registration, the game rules. It's very difficult. And it keeps evolving, which I think is good. And I would say it is the game rule that's at fault. I would say it's the kiasu mindset.
Okay, so it's us individuals, not the system that is at fault.
No,
it's us trying to game the system.
Yeah, it is us.
Doesn't the system set up a structure of incentives that parents are then operating within? Right.
But you can also say it's because of our kiasu, then the system has to change to become that way, right?
Right.
They keep asking for more different kind of phases to be fair to themselves.
So while trying to be fair and more equitable for all, we end up being a bit unfair to some.
So I don't know that the system is necessarily set up to be fair. I think that MOE has done a lot in the past decade or so to try and adjust things a little bit to, for example, make more spots available in Phase 2C, Phase 2B. But I think there are a lot of rules that we have in the system that are not necessarily fair, right?
For example?
Is it fair that children of alumni should have priority access to schools? I think this has been brought up before. People have suggested that perhaps this is not a very fair rule. Is it fair, sorry, Jinda, I know that you volunteered as a parent, but is it fair that parents who have the time to volunteer and who can afford to take time off of work to volunteer, right? Is it fair that their kids should have priority access? I think that's also debatable.
Right.
So I think that there's a question as to whether the whole system is set up to be fair or not.
But I think some parents will argue, if I have the resources, I have the time, then why not? I mean, it's still sacrifice on their part. So I know people who, you know, let's say we take the example of parent volunteer. It's not that they don't have a job, but they will wake up extra early to go and do that and rush off to go and do a job. So some parents would say, you know, it's not that I'm privileged and I'm a stay-home mom and so therefore I have a lot of time to do that.
Well, some are, but not
all. Some are. Yeah. But parents can also argue that they are also struggling in this aspect. And so that's why it brings me back to the whole idea of, I think it's a little bit too... No, there are too many routes to primary one school.
I mean, the way I see it, there will never be a system that is fully, entirely fair for everyone. In every system, some will benefit more than others. Mm. If we look at other countries, you go to the school that is nearest where you live. And same thing happens. The property prices near good schools go up. So then it goes back, have we built up our education system where we sort of put these schools, these brand name schools, as like our pride and joy? That used to be the case in the past. So now everyone's wanting to go to those, I don't know, 10 or 15 schools in the whole country.
So
but if every
argue,
school was kind of the same...
So every school is a good school?
I mean, I wouldn't say that, but every school is different. So, but imagine if every school had the same name all across the country, just like, for example, which means there'll be no differentiation between...
Singapura 1, Singapura 2, Singapura 3, you know? And then, so nobody... But people go, oh, the 1 is better than the 5.
Probably.
You can't use numbers,
you can't use numbers, you can't use alphabets.
Yeah, the classrooms, for my child primary school, they are changing the numbers to... A name.
Like gratitude and appreciation,
and stuff. Yes.
You know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the Ministry of Education, they used to investigate a yearly average of one case of false address, right? In recent years, this figure has jumped to about 9 cases. So, I mean, we were talking about this, earlier on, but what do you think is driving this increase? So, obviously, parents know that something like that works. Do you think that, you know, a sentence like this will then cause them to go, maybe we are not going to try and game the system? Or, Jinda, do you believe that people are just going to game the system, whether or not you might be jailed for it?
Yeah. With this jail term, right, I find that there's like two consequences. One is a strong deterrence. Like in Chinese, it's 杀一儆百. You kill one to 100. And I think that has a big effect. Okay. So I think for sure, it works as a deterrence. But on the other hand, I think when you change the rule of the game, we'll just find other loopholes, other ways to play around with this game. Yeah. You take away parent volunteer. Yeah. I can't spend time to earn that spot. I will use money to buy a property. to get that address. Yeah.
So more will flock into the other method anyway.
Yes, we'll figure out some ways.
With the every time a rule changes, like Jinda says, it changes. It just simply changes the strategy that parents are going to use, right? So if you collapse phase 2A1, 2A2 into phase 2A, which is what happened a few years ago, that just means that your alumni association membership doesn't really count for much anymore. And as a result, you need to move closer to the school to get in, right? This question of should we step up checks, I have my doubts as to how much you can really do that, right? If you have if you say that you're using your caregiver's address, and you're going to stay there for 30 months, how are you really going to police whether or not the child is going to the caregiver's address? What if the child goes to the caregiver's address for 1 hour and then goes back to their parents' house? Is that still counted as meeting the requirement or not, right? So I think that there's a limit to how much we can police, and instead we should be thinking about what is the broader incentive structure that is driving this behavior.
When you speak to parents, how do they actually rank the schools in their minds. It looks like when I look at the data over the years, they're not concentrated on that those so-called brand name schools anymore. Parents are looking across different estates, but there's always within that estate that one particular school gets oversubscribed. So in a way, we're kind of shifting behavior, but parents are still complaining that schools get oversubscribed, the ones that they really want to, that's maybe near the house.
Yeah, so I think what is happening here is that the super elite schools, the elite of the elite, have been oversubscribed for a while, and parents know that they're oversubscribed. So they already cut that out of their choice set, right? And so I had a parent, for example, who told me there's a few different types of schools. There's the cannot get in one, there's the maybe can get in, and there's the don't want to get in one, right? So I think what you're pointing to is very accurate in that I also see that increasingly I hear parents saying, oh yeah, I don't want to go to that elite school because you can't even get in the first place, right? On top of the fact that they're afraid that, oh, maybe all the parents in that school, they send their kids for tuition and I don't want to deal with that kind of competition, right? So they'll go for instead what they call a good enough school, right? But they still differentiate between the good enough school and the don't want to get in school, right? So parents still are operating with that hierarchy in mind. And so I think you see more and more competition for these so-called good neighborhood schools.
I don't think any parent will feel comfortable saying, oh, when you grow up, and I'll tell you one day, oh, by the way, I sent you to just a good enough school because, you know,
it was the only one available.
I figured that was it was good enough for you, you know? So yeah, I don't think that's going to happen. But yeah, I think if more schools generally do better, every time a school has great or good grades from a previous batch, they get more numbers the following year. So somehow, if we could share the joy of results, you know,
but
I don't know.
We don't know the results
yeah.
now.
Yeah. Oh, now we don't. But you still know who are, how many like kids did like really improved over the year, or, you know, there are always a few schools that stand out each year.
I think one thing is always very lacking. While I run s3schooling.com, there's a lot of data about oversubscription. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's one good gauge of what is a popular school. No, it's like the hawker queue where we know, yeah, everybody is queuing for that. We will also want to queue for that. But on the other hand, when we want other data, like, yeah, their other achievement, be it arts, music, or even just to see the face of the school, like the teachers, the principal, I don't even know them. Yeah, all these are very lacking. Yeah. So I feel that schools themselves, they have to market themselves better. Yeah, like companies, like brands, right? Create an IG account, you know, post more, yeah, so that parents can follow and know and then make their choices better.
Wow, that's school admin work. And then we go back down to teachers, burnt out workload.
Social manager.
Oh, yeah, social media manager. Yeah, you don't have to have, don't make the teachers do it. Don't make the teachers do it.
But so much of life, we make choices based on what we see, how we feel about a certain brand, you know. Yeah. So I think, it's important to get the name out of the school. And then people will realize that, hey, there are more schools out there that do great work too.
Yeah. Can I just add to this point about music or arts or like schools trying to market their strengths in certain other areas? Just based on what I found talking to parents for my research, few parents find that sort of information meaningful. They say, yes, I know that like these schools have, you know, because every school nowadays, they have their applied learning program, they have their learning for life program. MOE has done a lot actually to try and help schools to develop these niche programs and market these niche programs. But are they really meaningful decision criteria for parents of six-year-olds who may not yet have a specialized interest in these things, right? Like it may be more relevant for secondary school choice, but not necessarily for primary school choice. But what I find that parents actually want is to be able to talk to more parents in the school itself, right? So parents rely a lot on their social networks for information. They trust their friends' information. If their friend has a kid in the school, they're like, oh yeah, I know this thing about this teacher. But if a parent doesn't have that kind of network of parents to talk to, then they feel like they're in an information vacuum. And that is when they are going to fall back on these sorts of heuristics or these kinds of personal experiences that they've had from their younger days, right? Stereotypes, etc.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. I'm one of those parents who will mute the parents' chat group.
There you go.
It's a bit much. Hey. It's a bit much for me. Yeah, I think I would definitely be muting
the parents' chat group. No, if you can resist the urge to, you know, stay away from it,
Yeah.
Kudos to you.
Yes, yes.
Okay, well, this sounds like one of those where we don't have an answer right now, but I guess, you know, the branding of schools is a good point. I think if schools were able to better share what it is that they excel in, the type of school they may be, then that could convince some parents to send their kids to that school.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a good thing we don't use pencils anymore, you know, because the pencil nibs always break, right? Then it'll be pointless.
With that, we've come to the end of our deep dive episode. Thank you so much. And if you have any comments, any questions, or if there's a topic that you would like us to delve into, please write to us. We're at cnapodcasts@mediacorp.com.sg.
See you guys next week. Bye.
Bye.